Rent-to-own properties or lease options are coming back in style. Let's spend a little time tonight and talk about it.
You're about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
What do you seem to understand? I'm not locked in here with you.
That's it!
You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone! And welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California. Member of the National Association of Realtors. Howdy do, everybody. Here we are. It's Wednesday. Some interesting things have happened just since we talked yesterday. Today's a great show. I think it's great. Something I've talked about before, but it's been years ago. I've always been a huge fan of lease options. I don't know. I guess they might be called other things in other states. I think the legal term is a lease option. Maybe it's more generally referred to as a rent-to-own. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the status of rent-to-own and popularity. And we're going to talk about exactly what the thing – excuse me – what the thing is and why it's kind of awesome. But we're also going to take just a brief moment to explore a moment of realtor karma that I came across today. So as I've mentioned before, I enjoy working with veterans. So I send my contact information to a lot of organizations that reach out to help veterans. Most of the ones that are like generally involved in that stuff, like a Wounded Warrior Foundation and stuff like that, I've sent them notes like, hey, I want to help vets and I'm willing to do things in terms of doing that for them. But they never seem to get back to me or can't really figure out a way that I can help. I mean, I offer to do what I do for them for almost nothing kind of a thing. So I've put that out there and it's nothing, it's never really gone anywhere. So I kind of pursued the other route. So I've given my contact information to an awful lot of institutions that focus on doing veteran loans, right? So not government organizations, but organizations that focus on providing loan products for vets, specifically VA type loans. So anyway, one thing that tends to be kind of true is that the referrals I get from those tend to be for relatively low purchase amounts. And that's fine with me. There may be instances where I might push back on prices simply because there is no way to find a house for some folks at certain price points. But if it's a vet, I don't care what the price point is, I'll do what I can to try to find them something. So in this case, I had a vet who I've been talking to for, I don't know, I guess I probably first talked to him about 7 months ago, 6 months ago. And when I first got his contact info, he was in a tough spot. He was going through, he was wounded while he served. So he had some knee stuff going on. He was worried about losing his job. And he was qualified, according to the VA person who referred him to me, the VA lender, for $225,000 to purchase a home. Almost no chance that that's going to happen. It's going to be real tough. I'll have to go way outside the zone I normally serve to find him something. But my philosophy is I will find you something, right? So that may mean I have to go into communities. If it's way out there, I mean, I kind of have to – if you're going to have to go all the way to the Central Valley, which is literally hours for me to get to, just from a practical standpoint, it's not possible. And I've had to hand off a couple of those folks to folks who focus on those communities. And I always feel bad about it because I'll have a chat with these agents that are going to get them. And I never feel like they're just hot to do the best job possible for them. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm, I don't know, projecting or something. But in any event, I guess they hand off or potentially hand off these folks to more than one person. I don't know, but I met with him today. So I've been sending him emails every now and again, just asking him how he's feeling, how are things. Not being the push to do something, I keep telling him, don't worry about missing an opportunity. There's always another house. We'll make something work. Just get healthy, right? That's basically what I've been telling him. So we meet today for the first time in person. It'd really just been all email. And he brings his fiance with him. And I guess they've been together about 10 years, so super long time. And I was ready to kind of let them know that the communities they were most interested in was going to be real tough to find something in their price range. They'd have to go way out, like to Hollister or something like that, if they really wanted, or down as far as south as Salinas, or they'd have to look more out towards Santa Cruz to find certain properties. Because I wasn't finding anything in their price range that was going to come close. And I hadn't realized there was a child in the mix too when they met me this evening. They brought their little girl with her, just a great little girl, and they're great people. And he says, well, you know, they sent me two people, you, me, and somebody else. And he goes, the other guy just wouldn't even give me the time of day. He wouldn't respond to my emails or my voicemails or anything. And maybe the guy was just super busy, maybe. But I said, you know, yeah, well, I'm happy I was able to help you out, and we'll just, you know, if 225 is what you guys qualify for, great. We'll find you something. He says, well, you know, the truth is that everything's really gotten better in terms of things for us. So apparently his girlfriend has got this great job and she's making more money. And what the shakeout of it is, I turned them on to a loan person that I know, Tracy, the same one I've always suggested all along. And I also gave them three other suggestions for places to go to get loan bids, to have people bid for their business. And I wouldn't be surprised if they come back qualified for $500,000 if they're with her as the primary borrower and him as a secondary. Their credit ratings aren't stupendous, but they aren't like horrible. So it wouldn't surprise me if they qualify for something in that range, and it would give – and when they were telling me what monthly payment they'd be comfortable with, it was in that range. So – and the part of me that is always jumps to the – and maybe this is bad for me, but the part – it was one of those deals where I thought in my mind the reason why the other person didn't contact him was because of the amount. It was $225,000 and they didn't want to put out any effort for a commission that was that low. So – maybe I'm just a bad person for assuming that's why that other person never called him back or never returned his emails. But I want to use this as a point because I know I have tons of real estate agent listeners. And I want you to stop worrying about the damn check at the end of the escrow. I understand if you've got rent to pay, you've got a mortgage to pay, you've got kids to feed, you've got all these things in life you've got to do. I get that the tough times come along for real estate people. It's tough. You only make money when you make money. It's not like you're getting a regular check. But I swear, if you stop focusing on the money, if you just do the right thing, if you focus on doing the best for everyone who contacts you, and at least doing the courtesy of returning a call or an email from someone, your business will do better. And this is tough for me to say because I've had difficult times. I've tried to live by these rules, and I've had difficult times, sometimes where I've had to go off and go dip my toes in the corporate world of employment again for a period of time to make ends meet. But I tell you what, I still firmly believe that doing your business that way is good for you, and it's good for your business, no matter how you look at it. If you think of yourself as if you are a bastard and you just don't give a damn about any of these folks who come to you for you to represent them, even if you are that guy or gal, don't think of it that way. Think of it, well, here's a person who today is going to spend $225,000, but you know what? In a few years, these folks are going to be making more money. They're going to want to upsell to a new house. Who are they going to call? If you treat them right, they're going to call you. So even if you're a self-serving, greedy bastard, there's a good reason to treat these people right, to treat everyone right. It costs you nothing. You know, it costs you a few minutes. So just do it. You know, even for those of you who feel that that kind of stuff is below you, right? Maybe you're doing all your other marketing exactly the ways I hate, but it's working. Because I'll be honest, the ways I hate in real estate make money. If you're willing to bear that weight on your soul, it works. So imagine how much easier life would be if you didn't have a soul, right? Or at least how much easier it would be to blow off other people. In any event, you get where I'm going with this. I'm not going to make much money on this. In fact, yeah, because for a variety of reasons, because of things I do in these circumstances, I'm barely going to make gas money on this. But the day I find them a house and they move into it, I'm going to be one happy dude. Yeah. It's going to be food for the soul. So anyway, and I'm not going to ask you to do the same things I do. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying investments in treating people right today can pay you money later. So don't blow people off. Everyone blew these folks off because they felt they were inconsequential and couldn't spend enough money. I sit down and learn a little bit about them for an hour today, and I am jazzed to help them make this step in their lives and to do this. And we even talked about strategies for purchasing and then in a few years buying another property without selling the one they're in so they can rent the one they're in. So these guys are dialed in, right? They're about improving their future. They're exactly the kind of people I love to work with. So yay for me. And yay for you if you stop blowing these people off if you're an agent out there listening. So, all right. So let's get into it because I like this topic. This is a great topic. It is also a fan-freaking-tastic way to get yourself into a house if you can find a seller who's willing to embrace this thing. And I think this is something I think you need to bring up to sellers. I don't think sellers are going to actively come out and say, hey, rent my house to own it or go into a lease option with me to buy this house. Given what we've just talked about over this last week in terms of what's going on with the marketplace, what's going on with HELOCs, what's going on with trends in the market, all of the flattening, all these various things, I think you could take this data and go to the person who owns the house you're currently renting and make a compelling case for them to at least consider an offer you might want to make on a rent-to-own basis. All right? So I think this is a fantastic strategy. And then there's absolutely no downside for you to at least give it a shot. All right? Let me go ahead and cover the article first because it's actually kind of interesting. Rent-to-own programs are once again increasing in popularity after losing steam back in the 1990s. Previously, small operators dominated the programs, but now with lenders setting the bar high, more investors are choosing to hop on board with the idea. So, yeah, all of that is correct, sort of. Lending was a little bit of a different beast in the early 90s, didn't change until 95. I've got some really old shows you can listen to that talk about how basically 1995 was the start of subprime lending and what ended up killing us 10 years later. The article explained that one of the fastest growing rent-to-own companies is Home Partners of America, which recently spent $100 million to buy about 320 homes. The perk of rent-to-own programs is that the consumer can decide not to purchase the home if it is more expensive than comparable properties in the area. And we're going to cover this from every angle. We're going to cover this from the buyer's standpoint, from the seller's standpoint, and maybe even from an investor standpoint in terms of it being part of a really cool money-making strategy for folks who are sort of into the whole buy and flip thing, but who kind of like the idea of taking it some short-term advantage of rental rates that's going on right now. Let's see. Wall Street firms have found a new way to profit from consumers with blemished credit who can't qualify for a mortgage. Let them rent a home first with the option to buy it later. For rent, for investors, it's a chance to profit off the recovering housing market. Consumers get a chance to lock in a home before they have the money together for a down payment, but the price may be higher rent in the interim and a higher purchase price the longer the wait to move from renting to owning. One of the fastest growing rent-to-own companies is Home Partners of America, which was co-founded 3 years ago by former Goldman Sachs executive William Young. Mortgage securities veterans Louis Renieri was an early investor in the company, and real estate mogul Sam Zell has acted as an advisor to Mr. Young. Late last year, Home Partners received a $500 million equity investment from a group led by money manager BlackRock Incorporated's alternative investments arm. The rest of this is goofy, so that's no point in reading it. Quote, what really frustrates me personally is that a lot of the people I grew up with, extended family members, would have trouble getting access to mortgage credit today, said Mr. Young. He says his company spent $100 million to buy about 320 homes in June, up from $15 million or 66 homes in June of last year. More words that are unimportant. Okay, here's how their Home Partners program works. A consumer teams up with a real estate agent to select a home in one of Home Partners' approved communities, which tend to be suburban locations with strong school systems and with homes priced between $100,000 and about $725,000. Home Partners buys the home and leases it to the consumer, who has the right to purchase the home from Home Partners within 5 years in most places. During the renting years, the consumer is expected to repair his or her credit and save for a down payment, but the longer they rent, the more they will pay to acquire the house. For example, a house shown on Home Partners' website has a list price of $449,975 in Chula Vista, California. The family that agrees to rent that house from Home Partners has the right to purchase the home for $472,035 after 1 year and would have to pay $573,762 if it waited 5 years before purchasing, a markup of 28% from the initial list price. The monthly rent on the property would start at $2,810 a month and escalate to $3,256 in the fifth year. For consumers, that likely means that they are paying a premium over renting or buying a typical home. Monthly payments on a 30-year conventional mortgage in the same house would be around $1,800. The average rent for a single-family home in San Diego is $2,270 a month, according to Moody's Analytics. We could go on, but I wanted to basically point out that what these guys are using is a kind of a cool strategy from the investor standpoint, where they're really kind of – this is a great way for folks to repair their credit. Don't get me wrong. But the terms that they're setting forth are jacked in terms of how it treats the buyer. So it's great. If you think the Home Partners way is great, go ahead and go to their website. Check out what they've got. See if there's anything in your area that floats your boat, tickles your fancy. I feel like I should have a third one of those. Elevates your – I don't know. Elevates your – desires. I don't know. That's a creepy – that sounds a little sick. Anyway, so let's see. I want to try to give you one example. Let's see. Tiffany Morgan, who works in marketing in Sugarland, Texas, turned to Home Partners in 2013 after divorce destroyed her credit. Divorce destroyed her credit. This is sort of an odd side note. Divorce increased my credit by 25 points, and I'm not real sure why that was. It's the only thing that happened, and like 8 months later, my credit suddenly jumped. She first heard about the program. She thought it was a scam. I thought, no way, it's some scheme that I'm going to fall into, said Ms. Morgan, who is in her mid-30s with a seven-year-old son. Home Partners purchased the home for around $205,000, and she rented it for about a year for $1,730 a month. That same year, she improved her credit and bought the house for $215,000. She thought, what's the worst case? I'll lease it for a while, and then if I fall in love with it, I'll do what I need to do to make it happen. So here's the deal. That's all great, and it eliminates some things from a normal lease option. But let's talk about a normal lease option. And let's say you don't want to go with one of these guys' Home Partners communities. I'm not saying you shouldn't. Go look, see what you like about the deal. It sounds like it's very tailored to folks that are in a kind of a hosed situation. But I think the solution I'm going to suggest is just as sweet for potential buyers out there who may be having a little bit of difficulty. So here's what a lease option is. A lease option is an offer to buy a house with a lease option rider on it. So you set out the terms of the purchase in the contract, how much you're going to pay, what interest rates you want to get. You set it all out, but you just have a lease option addendum to it. And in there, you set how long the lease option is set, when it expires, and the terms of the lease option. So let's give an example, and we'll just use round numbers for fun. Let's say it's that you're renting right now, because what I'm going to suggest is the best deal you're going to get is the one you can create with your landlord, right? So using the ammunition that you've gotten from this show just over the last few days, approach your landlord and say, you know, this is looking like a good time to sell, right? I would suggest you make a normal market level offer on the property in your contract. And then in the lease option, you stipulate, I'll continue to pay the rent I'm paying now. So you are freezing your lease payments. And this is the way I'd write the contract originally, right? You want to write it in a way that is beneficial to you and not but still enticing enough to the seller. So what's enticing to the seller? The seller probably has a fairly reasonable idea, or the owner, the landlord, may or may not, but they probably have a pretty reasonable idea of what the home is worth. So what do you do to figure out what the home is worth? I would approach a real estate professional and say, please do a quick market analysis on this home. Have them do it, see what number they poop out at the end. Go on to Zillow, see what number that poops out there. Go to Trulia, see what number poops out there. Whatever number is lowest, use that and make an offer. That's the number that you want to pay for the house. So this is probably a number they've seen. They're probably not completely out of whack, but make that the amount you're willing to offer. Maybe Trulia or Zillow is a little bit lower than market. The market analysis one is probably going to come the closest to the real market value of the property. If you want to be a little bit aggressive, you can. Let's say the value according to the market analysis comes out as 210, and you want to offer 2. That's fine. You just want it to be in the right ballpark. Maybe you're giving a little bit of a discount, but remember, you're asking the seller to delay when they get paid. So if you go with the market value today, you can go with the argument of, well, look, you know, I'm going to go ahead and sign this piece of paper that says I'm willing to buy your property in X number of years, but we'll be locking in the purchase price, right? So by doing a market level today, you're showing them data that shows that you think things are going to decline, you're sort of putting in their head, hey, you know what? When the time comes, I could actually make a better deal on this. Now, don't you panic. The first thing that's popping into some of your heads is probably, well, then I'm screwing myself, Robert. If I go out there and I make this offer and price values and home values go down, well, then I'm hosed, right? Because then I'll pay more for the house. Au contraire. No, no, no. You will not. At least I don't think you will. Given how much it could possibly go down, I don't think you will. And let me tell you how we're going to work this out. You include a earnest money down payment kind of thing, right? So the earnest money thing wouldn't happen. They wouldn't get that money until you decide to execute the contract. So the contract sits there, everybody signs it, but it's not set to execute until the lease option ends. Now, you may include in the lease option some amount of earnest money, like maybe it's $1,000, maybe it's $500, maybe it's nothing. You could do nothing. I always think it's good to put something just as a token of I'm willing to put cash on this document to show you that I'm dedicated to this transaction, right? And here's the stuff you spell out. You spell out how much you're willing to drop up front in the pool, in the kitty, right, as your earnest money. You say, here's how much I'm willing to pay you for the term of this lease. Remember, you're signing probably a multi-year lease. You get to pick. It could be 1 year, it could be 2 years, it could be 3 years. You should have thought ahead of time, how long will it take you to save up the money to come up with the down payment you need, get your credit going, whatever, to purchase the house in 2 or 3 years, all right? You might want to lock in a rent that's maybe a little bit higher than the rent you're paying now. Let's pretend you're paying $1,000 a month on this house. Let's say you go ahead and put $1,100 based on the idea that rents are going to go up. So you're throwing them that as a bone, right? You're saying, hey, I get that that rent is going up. I've always been a very good renter for you. So, you know, I don't think you would jack up my rent the full amount each and every year that you could, simply because you know how reliable I've been in terms of paying my rent, right? And let's hope that you have been. Here's where the good part comes in. So you've put maybe down a little bit money down as earnest money, which you'll lose if you don't buy the house, right? You've established a rent that you're going to pay. And as part of this lease option, the next thing you do is you say X percent of my monthly rent will be going towards buying down the purchase price of the property. Yeah? You like that? So every month you can say X percent. It could be 50%. It could be 99%. It could be 100%. You probably don't want to do that. I mean, because you're trying to make this at least attractive. But, you know, you could start the conversation at a value that really is lopsided towards you. Because who knows what this landlord may say. That's a great idea. You could simply say, with all rents paid are contributing toward buying down this house. So let's pretend it's $1,000 a month in rent that you're paying. Every year you're paying down that purchase price by $12,000. Good, huh? $36,000 by the end of 3 years. Not too bad. Assuming that property values don't go down ridiculously, there's a really good chance you may have bought that sucker down to the point where you've already got equity in it. You'd only need to get financing for an amount where you don't even have to come up with a down payment. Worst case scenario is, let's say you decided to go 50-50. Let's say 50% of my rents contribute to buying down the property. Well, suddenly it's, right? It's like $18,000. That's pretty good, right? Awesome tool. Totally fantastic. Rarely used. I managed to do a couple of these in the 90s. And you do the happy dance. You feel like you've done an awesome thing. Now, here's the thing. If you don't exercise your option, or you cannot exercise your option before the expiration of the lease, you lose the money. You lose it all, right? And you kind of don't lose it all. You've been paying rent anyway. Excuse me. Here comes another one, I think. It's sneaking back up. All right. Sorry. Maybe I'll edit that out. That's the advantage of pre-recording. I can edit out the sneezes. But there's really no downside. I mean, would you be out that $250, $500, $1,000 deposit-y thing that you put up at the front? Yeah, if you do one, I suggest you do, just because I think it's a motivator. But I'll tell you, this is one of the most awesome ways to save for purchasing your home without choice involved. If you figure out, let's say it's a $200,000 house. So if you needed to have 80% equity in it, that would mean that for a $200,000 house, you would need to come up with $40,000, right? That's worst case scenario. But imagine how awesome it would be to have half of that already taken care of through the amount you've got being contributed to buying down the purchase price of the property. It is such a great tool. Again, it's not something someone's usually going to advertise and say, I'm looking to do a lease option. It's usually something that you're going to want to let your landlord know, hey, I really love this house. I'm improving it. I'm really taking good care of the place. And I would love to buy it from you. Would you be interested in doing a lease option? Now, the reason why you need to have a little bit more of a carrot in a lease option, where you increase the rents or you offer a little bit of a deposit on the front end, is the seller, the landlord, needs to see a reason to be attracted to this instead of simply renting it to you like a normal person for the next 3 years. Because if they're thinking about it, they're going to do the math in their head. They're going to say, well, you know what? What's the upside for me? By locking myself in, I don't get to increase the rent as I would. The price they're offering me isn't competitive even today, right? So they're saying, well, I'm giving up any appreciation that might come, and I'm giving up the ability to raise the rent. So why would they take it? Well, okay, so you should address the whole appreciation thing by giving them enough data to indicate that there may be no appreciation and that there actually may be a decline in the value of properties. Next, you should sweeten the mix a little bit with slightly higher rent now so that you can say to them, well, you know, I'm already kind of building in rent and growth of rent in this by paying a little bit more than what we're doing right now. But here's the other thing. Here are other reasons why a seller or a landlord should be enticed by this. One, you now have an ownership interest in the property. You are from here on out, once you've got a piece of paper that says in 2 years, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, whatever you decide on, by the way, the longer the term, the less likely the landlord is to sign it. But you know, you can start with a longer term and see if they'll sign it and then negotiate down from there. But it's all negotiable, so make sure to use it to your best advantages to start and start the conversation wherever they're willing to start it. So they have a tenant with a built-in owner's feeling for the place. So they know that no matter what happens, the place is going to be well taken care of because you've got that ownership stake. Next, they know that if for whatever reason you can't exercise your option, they get to keep all that money. They get to keep the deposit you put down. They get to keep the entire rents. There's no buy down amount on the thing. And then they can turn around and evict you and sell it if that's the attractive thing to do. Or they continue to rent it to you if you like, or enter into a new lease option agreement. Or if they agree, I mean, if you're pals with your landlord and you're really close and you're only 2 or 3 months away from being able to exercise your option, maybe you could ask for an extension. You know, you could negotiate an extension. I'm sure it would cost you something, but it might be worth it for you. So I'm going to suggest that for anyone out there who is currently renting, and I think that this is something you should consider no matter who your landlord is, even if you've got one of those goofy landlords who bought a huge chunk of properties through all the auctions that went on a few years ago, and there's a management company, contact the management company and don't let them simply say no, because that's what they will likely do. You need to find out who the actual owner of record of that property is. A real estate agent can likely find that out for you. In California, a real estate agent can find that out for you. I can input an address and I can get the address and name of the owner of record immediately. It may not be a person's name. It probably won't be. It'll be a company name, but it'll have a mailing address. So you send stuff and there'll be a phone number. So you can call that phone number and say, I'd like to speak to the person in charge of properties that you guys own that are currently for rent. They will try to refer you to the property management company. Don't say this isn't a property management issue. This is a investment / buyer question for someone who would like to purchase the property they're renting. And be persistent. Remember, you know, every single day, everyone who answers the phones in these various companies are sticking round pegs in round holes. That's it. Every day. Who do you want to talk to? Okay, that's this person. Boink. You're going to be asking them something that's going to be a shape they don't see ever. Be the shape they don't see ever. In fact, you should run your life that way, frankly. Never be the shape that's like everybody else. Be that octagon to go into the hole. But just don't say, oh, okay, sorry to bother you, thank you. Nope, don't do that. Absolutely be friendly. Smile while you're talking. Say, hey, you know, I understand this is a really funky question. You'd be really helping me out, though, if you could turn me on to the person who I can talk to, who's sort of in charge of these properties, who's managing this portfolio. It'd be great. And I really have a proposition for them that I think they'll want to entertain. If you want, use this article. This is an article from the Wall Street Journal. And you can share with them this article and say, well, you know, I've seen this is happening and there's some great things going on in terms of companies really embracing this with the way markets are going. And you can use some of the other data I've shared in terms of foreclosures are going up, HELOCs are happening here and there. So a lot of the market things are unstable. And even though they may not be suffering from that because they're not going to get HELOCs that get foreclosed on, it'll negatively affect the value of their properties. And remember, most of these guys did not get into real estate to get into real estate. They got into real estate because that's where the money was. If the money was in spoons, they'd be buying spoons. So these are guys that aren't committed to a real estate kind of thing. These are guys who happen to work for investment companies that have for right now got a great deal by buying auctioned off properties by the metric ton. So just be a little, I'm not saying to be pushy. I'm just saying to be persistent, right? Remember that thing we talked about the other day about being ready to embrace the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Be that person. All right. So jump into that. You know, I'd almost think it would be good to have an extended show on this topic, or maybe, you know what? Maybe that could be one of my first webinars. Maybe we could do a webinar on lease options and we would just walk through all the paperwork, the various ways to set it up. That could be a good hour and a half seminar. Anybody interested in that? Let me know. Again, I'm hot for all the questions that are at the top of your mind. What are the things about getting into business, doing business, being financially independent, real estate, whatever? What are the things that scare the crap out of you? That's what I want to know. I want to dispel that fear with a little knowledge. In other news, I got an interesting email from the author of a staging book, a home staging book. I want to be able to read a little bit of it before I bring her on, but I'd love to have her on the show and interview her not only about her book, but about her success as a writer. You know, there may be plenty of folks out there who feel like they've got a book in them. It's just a question of getting it out. God, so many jokes just jumped right into my head. I'm not even going to say them because they're really probably not appropriate. I have to change the rating of the show. But maybe we can pull that book out of you and with just a little advice from someone who's done it. She's written the book. She's out there doing it. She's out there promoting it. She's reached out to me for whatever sick, twisted reason she thinks that'll help. And we can maybe not only find out about her book, but find out about what fueled her success as a writer. So look for that because I'm going to respond to her within the next day or so and see if we can arrange an interview. All right, folks. Once again, I could not be happier with my excellent listeners who have once again, just over the last 24 hours, broken all the records in terms of listenership on the show. I am blessed every day by you guys, and I really appreciate it. If you'd like to get in contact with me, head on over to www.therebelbroker.com. I've been goofed. You may have seen I don't think you would have seen anything weird on the feed because this doesn't feed the feed, but I've been fooling with different players. I'm having a heck of a time getting the enhanced podcast content to show up on the website. It's starting to look like only Apple stuff seems to work with the enhanced podcast. And this annoys me to no end, to the point where I'm almost considering hiring a guy to write code just for my website to make these dang enhanced podcasts work on the site. It annoys the heck out of me that I can't get these things to work. And I've tried like 5 different things. It's really starting to annoy me. But anyway, thanks again for listening. I will talk to you all tomorrow. Have a fantastic 24 hours.